a lectern that tells you how much time you have left, and when we have lights that kind of a backup warning system, when you get a yellow light, you should begin to bring your argument to a close, and then when the red light appears, you should finish your sentence and stop. And I remind you that rebuttal is for rebuttal only. All right, we call the first case, Morin, U.S. v. Morin, and we hear first from Ms. Lane.
May it please the court and honorable opposing counsel. We raised three issues in our brief, but because the first issue is foreclosed, we raised it only for possible further review, so I'm not going to argue that issue this morning. I'm going to spend my time on our second and third issues. Just briefly, by way of background, this was a drug case arising out of a checkpoint stop, and there were two defendants in the case. Before trial, the district court granted Mr. Morin's motion to sever, and the co-defendant, Mr. Hernandez, was tried separately and convicted before Mr. Morin's case went to trial. I'm not going to recount the facts because those were set out in our brief, and we did take those facts from the jury trial. But I want to point out that it was a jury trial, and so the issue is what, in regards to the issues we raised, the important thing is what the jury heard and the effect it had on the jury. And I just would like the court to be aware that in the government's brief, as they point out, they took the facts from the PSR. And the facts in the PSR are not exactly coextensive with what was came out at trial. And I note that on page 5 to 6 of the government's brief, they do set out Mr. Hernandez, the co-defendant's post-arrest statement. And that, of course, did not come in at Mr. Morin's trial. That was part of the reason for the severance. So I would just want the court to be aware of that when they're evaluating the errors here in light of the evidence at trial. Turning to the second issue that we raised is whether the government used improper expert drug profiling testimony to effectively tell the jury that Mr. Morin knew that he was carrying drugs. And this court's decision in Gutierrez-Farias stands for the proposition that while the government's agents may testify in general about the conduct of a drug business, if that's going to be helpful to the jury.
Doesn't this one turn on standard of review, which in turn turns on whether it was preserved? And candidly, from what I've seen, I can't see how the objections that were made go to the issue that you've just defined. And that would put us in plain error.
Your Honor, I have to say that, well, we take the position in our brief that there were some objections. And the first objection was to the whole line of questioning, you know, this is not relevant. The judge overruled it, and then the questioning continued. However, I do realize that this court in Gracia, the objections were not exactly on point to the issue we're raising in our brief. So the court could find that this was plain error. Nonetheless, we have taken the position that it was preserved, but I do recognize that it could be construed under plain error. But even under a plain error standard, Your Honors, the issue is it's not whether there was enough evidence to support the conviction. The issue is whether it had a substantial effect on the verdict and whether the verdict would likely have been different but for these errors.
Well, and also whether it went over the line to become profiling testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor, and we do take the position that some of this certainly did. And I know the government brought to the court's attention this recent case in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, and I just would note that we have the same prosecutor here as was the prosecutor in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, and we have these same issues still arising just years after Gutierrez-Farias came down. And the court did find in Gonzalez-Rodriguez that some of the testimony did cross the line. And I'd like to draw the comparison here between Gonzalez-Rodriguez, what they found, and in this case, because I think it's very analogous. And in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, the court found that testimony that the majority of people arrested at checkpoints are couriers was improper because it implies that the defendant was a courier and therefore knew of the drugs because he was arrested at the checkpoint. The court found that that was improper. In here, in this case, we have something very analogous. We have the statement, the same prosecutor asking, and the people that you're dealing with that you catch out there at the checkpoint, normally, in general, what is their job? Where do they fit in? Answer, I guess they're just the middlemen, the people that transport it. This question, like the question in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, was improper because it assumes the fundamental issue in this case, the ultimate issue, which was really the only issue in the case, which was whether Mr. Maureen, it assumes that he knew about the drugs, because it assumes that people caught with drugs at the checkpoint are part of the organization, they're middlemen, aka couriers, and therefore they know about the drugs. This court, again, found in Gonzalez-Rodriguez that that was improper. And then similarly, and that's raised on our brief on pages 23 to 24.
I mean, wasn't the import of that question, though, to distinguish between, like, kingpins and other people who play other roles? In other words, what role do the people play among the various roles in the drug organization who are caught at the checkpoint?
Well, that wasn't what the court found in Gonzalez-Rodriguez. The court found that it did because the defendant there was arrested at the checkpoint. Therefore, it was basically saying that, you know, you're arrested at the checkpoint and therefore you know about the drugs. It's the same line of questioning that was going on here. It was all in the context. But it's basically saying people we stop at the checkpoint, yeah, they have a role. Their role is to carry the drugs. In other words, their role is to get it through the checkpoint, to take it from point A to point B. In other words, they're not innocent dupes. They know what's going on.
Well, but if you're explaining how the drug organization works and what role each party plays, that doesn't seem too far out of line to me.
Well, again, this court, for substantially similar testimony in the same type of context in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, did find that it was improper because it did make that suggestion. And I think if you look onwards, very shortly thereafterwards, the question carrying on where the prosecutor asked, and in your experience, are some of the people that you catch out there, their only job is just to get it through the checkpoint? Correct. Again, that's the same thing. It's just emphasizing the fact that the people they catch at the checkpoint, they are the couriers. Mr. Maureen was caught at the checkpoint. There was drugs found there. Therefore, he must have known what was going on. I'd like to point out there is a third issue here that I'd like to raise with the court, and that is later, Agent Minnick, who was the government's case agent, was testifying about the video that the government put in, which showed that there was an exchange of trailers at a gas station. And the government was questioning about that video and saying, okay, they dropped off the trailer, they pulled it up, and then Mr. Hernandez and Mr. Maureen hook up their truck to the trailer, and the trailer's already loaded. Is that correct? Answer from the case agent, yes, right. Question, in your experience, would this be fairly common of how a drug organization would work? Answer, yes. This is improper because it's a direct comparison of the facts in this case to how a drug organization would work. And that is just classic drug profiling type of evidence. And
me, the most classic question is when, and I think we've had cases on this, where the agent is asked, would a drug organization ordinarily entrust drugs to someone who didn't know he was carrying them in his vehicle? I mean, that's the classic question.
That is certainly what has been condemned before in certain cases. I think that was the maybe the Mendoza case. I can't remember. There certainly are a number of cases on this issue, and the court has points up the problem. This has been happening a lot. But I think it's in the Williams case, which was the airport stop. Yes, the facts are a little bit different, but that was the same type of classic profiling where they said, here's what drug couriers do, and here's what Mr. Williams did. And that's exactly what happened here. I mean, it's matching the specific facts of this case. Stop at a gas station, a trailer pulls up, our tractor pulls up, and then there's an exchange of tractors. Is this how, would this be fairly common of how a drug organization works? Yes. And then in its closing argument, and the government says incorrectly in its brief that there was never any matching up of the facts in this case to a drug profile. Well, that's an exact example. The government also says it was not argued by the prosecutor, but in fact it was, because the prosecutor argued on page 645 of the transcript, real honest truck drivers don't pick up loaded trailers at the tripe store. That's what makes him guilty. That's what drug dealers do. It's their business. Somebody else dropped off a trailer, another tractor comes and picks it up. That's the way drug dealers operate. So
that's the argument he made to the jury.
That's the argument he made to the jury.
Why can't he ask the jury to make that inference?
Well, he can ask the jury to make an inference from the facts, but the problem here is that his case agent had already testified that was how drug agents operate, that the facts of this case were exactly on point to how drug operations.
I mean, he would have made that same argument. I mean, he could have made the same argument even if the agent hadn't testified to that.
And if the agent hadn't testified, that might have been a different case. But the agent did testify in this case, and the agent had already put its imprimatur on that, and it was the case agent who said that. And especially given the fact that this was it really came down to credibility, I think it was highly improper for the agent to testify that, and it was just compounded by the prosecutor arguing that in its closing.
Well, do you not have two different things about Minnick, the case agent? One is about the video, and the other has to do with knowledge, and she never testified or implied about his knowledge. She did about what you're calling profiling, about this fits everything, and I'm not sure I find a connect there.
Well, I think the connect would be that it's taking the specific facts of this case and linking it directly to how a drug organization works. Therefore, Mr. Maureen was part of the drug organization.
But the issue was whether he had knowledge of the presence of drugs, wasn't it?
Well, that's correct, but I think the inference is that if you're part of a drug organization, you're going to have knowledge.
She never referred to his knowledge.
She did not specifically refer to his knowledge. No, she did not. But she doesn't have to specifically refer to his knowledge. It simply has to be the functional equivalent. And I don't know if the court, you know, you might say there's two different things here, profiling or functional equivalent. And maybe this falls more under the profiling than the functional equivalent, but profiling is, to my mind, another way of saying that it's improper because it's assuming an ultimate fact that they're not supposed to testify about.
I mean, we've had several cases, though, where we've said it's okay for the agent to explain how the drug organization works. And, you know, if he explains, look, you start off with a supplier and he stays behind the scenes, and the courier picks up the drugs, and he delivers it. He gets them across the border and delivers them to somebody on the other side, and then that's his entire role. I mean, what's the difference in saying that and what was said here?
Well, Your Honor, the difference is that, again, it was specifically tied it to the facts of this case, and that's where it becomes improper, because it's saying, this is what this is what happened in this case, and then the question is, okay, is this how a drug organization works? Yes. So that specifically ties it. I would just like to briefly address my third issue because I'm running out of time, and we contend that Mr. Maureen was deprived of a fair trial when the prosecutor asked him in the course of cross-examination, do you know or call other drug dealers? And I did send a 28J letter to the court. The trial attorney did not object, but it was brought to the court's attention, very much so, because the court, the experienced trial judge, was just appalled at this question, called the prosecutor on the carpet. Assuming facts not in evidence, there had been no testimony at all, and the prosecutor admitted this, there had been no testimony at all about any other drug dealers. And it simply tainted Mr. Maureen with guilt by association. It implied that either he was a drug dealer, and other drug dealer means him, and I see my time is out.
I'll go over your red light.
Okay.
Put that in context of the curative instructions that the trial judge had after being appalled by it, and doesn't that cure it?
Your Honor, there were no specific curative instructions relative to this. There was nothing that was said. There were general instructions at the end of the case about how what the attorneys say is not evidence. But I would say that, like in Gracia, this maybe have moderately cured it. But when you take it all in the context here, that Mr. Maureen was testifying, and the prosecutor said at the end, this whole case comes down to the credibility, and this directly impugned his credibility by suggesting that either that he was a drug dealer, or, which the government, of course, had to prove, or that there was some other drug dealer and that he had been knowingly talking to. And the government has said in its brief that this was Mr. Hernandez. However, that's not what their prosecutor said down there. He was not able to identify any other drug dealer. And this is what horrified the district court.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. Judge Wiener is correct that the second issue is under a plain error standard of review. The only objections from defense counsel were relevancy and confusion regarding Agent Ortiz, that was on page 337, and speculation and testifying in the narrative, as well as leaning in relation to Agent Minnick. That can be found on pages 496 through 500. The testimony in this case was far removed from the situation where agents expressly compare a defendant's actions to a drug profile to prove the defendant's substantive guilt. This case is not like Gutierrez. In that case, the agent who hadn't even worked on the case, unlike agents Minnick, Ortiz, and the others in this case, in the Gutierrez agent testified that because most drivers know drugs are in their vehicle, Gutierrez must know too. And that wasn't the case. Like I said, the agents here actually discussed their firsthand knowledge of the facts, and then they gave a general explanation as to how Mexican drug organizations work. During Agent Ortiz's testimony, the prosecutor asked him to tell the jury, quote, a little bit about how a drug organization works, quote, in a general fashion, close quote. Judge Head confirmed that the testimony must be, quote, only in the most general way. That can be found at page 337. So both the prosecutor and the judge were cognizant of the need to avoid profiling. Ortiz, as this court generally noted, discussed the general operations of the Mexican organization on 337 through 339. Likewise, Agent Minnick discussed the statements that were tied to the business model on 496 through 500. The affirmance here is supported by this court's recent decision in Gonzales, which was also at the Falfurrias checkpoint, involved grapefruit instead of cabbage, also involved a tremendous amount of drugs with a very high street value. This court, in particular Judge Davis, upheld the basic business model of drug operations. In Gonzales, this court stated that it was okay for an agent to testify that drugs are produced in Mexico, that drugs organizations use couriers to transport them for distribution, that drugs are often transported by hiding them in seemingly legitimate places, that couriers normally do not handle drugs, that a courier probably would not hide drugs, and that the agent, therefore, was not surprised when he did not find the defendant's fingerprints on the bundles. This court stated that's not pure profiling testimony. It's specialized information that would help the jury understand the drugs were hidden. There's little risk that a conviction would be outside of the evidence. In this case, it's also important to note that in relation to Agent Ortiz, because that's what most of the testimony about the drug operation involved, that he never testified or provided the factual equivalent that Morin knew that the marijuana was in the trailer. And in fact, on cross-examination, he was specifically asked whether he had any idea that Morin knew what was in the back of the trailer. And Ortiz responded, quote, not to my knowledge. And the court can find this on page 353. So regardless of what he said beforehand, he concluded by saying he didn't know whether Morin had the requisite knowledge.
Ortiz is not the troubling one here. It's Minnick.
Minnick?
Yeah.
Because
after testifying all that, she came very close to linking the details of this one to her opinion that it fit the general that she testified to.
Well, Agent Minnick certainly testified that there were no fingerprints found on the drugs. However, if the court looks, Morin elicited essentially the same type of testimony. And Carriaga, who I think was one of the first witnesses, and he was one of the BOP agents, Morin asked him where marijuana is loaded, how drivers sometimes are totally oblivious to what they're handling or carrying, whether the BOP finds more tractor trailers carrying marijuana in cars or pickups, and how agents are trained to look at people and identify suspicious behavior. That can be found on 311 through 315. He asked Ortiz about the fingerprints on 353 through 354. But Agent Minnick's testimony was very careful. It was primarily about the video. In other words,
she's the one who interpreted the video?
Yes, sir. She did.
I mean,
the video.
Why doesn't that go across the line when she is asked, is this scenario typical of how drugs are transferred in a drug operation?
Well, because as I recall, Your Honor, the questioning was in relation to, if it's put in context, the question was in relation to how the drugs are transported. And her position was essentially that produce isn't transported through switching trailers at a Stripes convenience store close to midnight. And her, if you look often through her testimony, when Morin, they go through that Morin is in the Stripe store buying the Cokes and tacos and whatnot, defense counsel is often pushing her to try to agree that Morin or maybe it was Hernandez that used the debit card. But the point is, Minnick stuck with the fact. She kept saying, I don't know. All I can say is it's a hand-to-hand transaction. And I believe, Your Honor, the record is very clear that Minnick tried to embrace exactly what the video was showing. When she was asked about certain questions, if she didn't know, she said she didn't know. She said, all I can say is this is what the video shows. And the video, of course, you see them detaching the first trailer and then hooking it up to the load vehicle. So if you look at the context of that whole statement, I think it definitely falls within this court's decision in Gonzalez and others. But even if you were to find that isolated instance of error, it's not prejudicial. The result wouldn't have changed. There's no way that Morin's substantial rights were affected. The jury heard all types of evidence, specifically that he failed to tell the agents he went to the Stripe store. Now, I know he told them that he did, but both agents testified that, no, in fact, he did not. And the way he was caught in that lie was that Agent Minnick found the Stripes receipt in his wallet. The jury, of course, watched the detailed video of Morin and Hernandez at the Stripes picking up the 9,000-plus pounds of marijuana. The jury heard an implausible story that after he bought these Cokes and tacos, some fellow happened to be driving by and saw Morin and decided to stop. And Morin said, hey, can I go home and say goodbye to my family, which the record's not entirely clear, but I think he knew the family wasn't even there because they were handing out party invitations or at a party for this very fancy quinceañero they were going to have. So the jury heard all of that, and they also heard that even if it was correct, which it was not, that Oscar Cantu called a cab for him, the number that Marin gave for Oscar Cantu was incorrect. It was actually Marin's brother. The jury heard that as well. And then, of course, it heard from the owner of the cab company, who said he had talked to all of his drivers, and nobody had picked Marin up that night. So they heard all these implausible stories and inconsistencies. So even if this court were to find that isolated instance of Agent Minnick as improper, or more importantly, as plain error, the government contends that the conviction easily survives on this issue because of the plethora of other evidence. It just simply cannot fulfill the substantial rights.
Moran didn't testify, I gather.
Yes, he did.
He did testify.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. He said that he told the agents, but both agents said no. And there were other inconsistencies and plausibilities. They're set out in more detail in the brief, but for example, and I do agree, Ms. Ling was correct that the AUSA who wrote the brief should not have referred to the PSR. I think that the thinking probably was is because a sufficiency argument wasn't raised, and that's part of the reason I'm also giving you some record cites, and I do apologize for that. But the court also has to remember that there was no dispute here that Marin and Hernandez were friends for 12 years. They were each other's, but the record shows they were each other's children's godsons. At one time he testifies that he's the godfather, the other one, Hernandez. But in the phone he's entered as Compa, I think it's Juan. So, and that's on pages like 430, 540. We also have he exercised some control over the situation, and while that's not dispositive in hidden compartment cases, it is a factor. And he was the one who was driving. He handed over the bill of lading. He consented to the search and to cutting the seal. And presumably the jury, thinking if he were innocent, why wouldn't he have protested or acted, you know, why are you doing this or whatever? But he didn't. He just went along with things.
The seal was cut on the load?
No, the agents cut the seal with Marin's permission. However, all of that was fabricated. There was never any legitimate load of produce. Okay. There were just some cabbage leaves over the 9,000-plus pounds. So there was a false bill of lading and things of that nature. I don't think there was evidence to suggest that he firsthand fabricated that bill of lading and whatnot, but he certainly handed it over and exercised some degree of control. And, in fact, what was even more suspicious about that was he has been a commercial driver since 2001, but he said that he wasn't familiar with this particular bill of lading or a load sheet or something to that effect, something a driver would normally be very familiar with.
Else that distinguishes Minnick's testimony for the others where we have found crossing the line other than the fact that she didn't refer to the defendant specifically in her testimony?
Well, I think, yes, Your Honor, I think what's very different here is she was being asked a series of questions, and she was kind of being pushed on whether or not this was a standard practice, and her retort was, this is essentially what drug dealers do. They meet in the parking lot or what have you and do this. Because she had just gone through the entire video. This is at night. She's going through how there were one tractor came with the trailer attached, waited for the load tractor to come, then the first tractor detached the trailer, and then it was hooked up, and then there was another car, an avalanche that came, some kind of pickup truck, and they all met. So she's talking about it in this context, like under the stealth of night, that these people are getting together.
When you said this is what drug dealers do, was that on cross-examination? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the inference I made when you said she was being pushed to say that. And I don't think that's helpful to the government if it's the prosecutor who's pushing her to say that.
I'm not entirely sure that I have that page. If the one is on page 260, where it says, in your experience, would you expect somebody driving a large load of marijuana to handle the bundles? That's not what we're talking about. That's on direct.
We'll find it. That's
okay,
right.
I apologize, Your Honor. I just don't recall.
Okay.
But I know that, or as I recall, this came after her very detailed testimony about the video and what appeared to be going on. However, she reported essentially what the jury could see. She didn't step outside the boundaries unless, of course, it's on this one particular question. In relation to the third point, again, we're under plain error review. This wasn't guilt by association testimony. It was an isolated question. It wasn't even objected to. As Ms. Ling pointed out, the court chastised the prosecutor outside of the jury's presence. And Judge Head, obviously, if he felt that it had gone too far over the line, could have declared a mistrial or handled it otherwise, but did not. I agree that the prosecutor did not say it was Hernandez. However, in context, it does appear, and the jury could have concluded that the question was about he had been talking about Hernandez up to that point with one intervening question, like, in other words, you called Hernandez on the telephone and whatnot. And so they could have thought that meant anyone other than Hernandez. However, the prosecutor did not say that. But in any event, I don't think that the brief question casted serious doubt on the correctness of the verdict. And in fact, the jury, the judge had instructed the jury that not only are attorney's statements not evidence, the standard instruction that they give, but he also said that attorneys' questions are not evidence, and so they should not be considered as well.
Was there any discussion by Judge Head and counsel about whether they wanted a curative instruction?
I don't recall anything. In fact, what I do recall is Marin's counsel was silent through the whole thing. He never said a word. Judge Head was pretty upset, and I think that's where he wanted the prosecutor's boss called to come over. So, and that's what happened. And Judge Head clearly had control of the situation. And if in fact, he thought that this isolated question tainted the jury, he certainly had other remedies that he could have considered. But the fact of the matter is there's a plethora, as I said before, of other evidence in which to conclude that Marin had knowledge. And a lot of this came from out of Marin's mouth himself when he wasn't honest with the agents, and then when he insisted to the agents, as well as when he testified about the cab company and Oscar Cantu and all these other things that just simply did not check out at all. So with a two-day trial, one question, plain error review, the government's position is that error just simply did not occur, and you don't even need to reach the more substantive analysis under the plain error standard. And unless the court has any other questions, the government requests that this court affirm.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Okay, Ms. Lane.
Your Honors, I just want to first answer the court's question about whether Agent Minnick was pushed on by defense counsel or the prosecutor. And it actually occurred during the prosecutor's direct testimony. And there was an objection by defense counsel to a prior question. And then the prosecutor asked this other question about dropping off the trailer and what Mr. Marin and Hernandez did. Is that what happened? Yes, right. In your experience, would this behavior, this specific behavior that happened and was seen on the video, be common of how a drug organization would work? Yes. So the court is correct. That's the problem. It does link what happened in this case, and by the case agent, no less, by the prosecutor, no less, It wasn't the defense counsel eliciting this testimony. And I would certainly point out that on cross-examination, the defense counsel had to, you know, do the best he could with what had already come out. So it was the prosecutor in this case. It was error. And the government makes a big deal about the sufficiency of the evidence here. But the other fact is that the evidence in this case of Mr. Maureen's knowledge of the drugs, which was the whole issue, was circumstantial and really quite weak, because there was, unlike other cases where this court has found that there was no problem, there was no confession, and Mr. Maureen was not nervous. The agent specifically testified that, you know, he was not nervous at all, unlike his co-defendant. He was very cooperative, and the testimony evidence at trial also showed that it was Mr. Hernandez who falsified the bill of lading, signed the bill of lading. Hernandez was the person in charge of the load. Hernandez, the witnesses from the warehouses who also testified had no knowledge of Mr. Maureen. Hernandez was the person who called Mr. Maureen and asked him to accompany him. And the receipt for the diesel at the gas station where they stopped was on Mr. Hernandez's card, and it was found in Mr. Hernandez's wallet. So the whole issue here really was Mr. Maureen's knowledge, and this agent's testimony was very powerful, and the fact that the government then came back and argued it in closing after they'd put the stamp on it of the case agent definitely crossed the line.
It seems to me the fact that Maureen lied about going to the Stripe store was pretty strong evidence. How could you explain that?
Well, Your Honor, it was also pointed out at the trial that the agent, they never took any recording. It was just the agent's word against Mr. Maureen for what he had said when he spoke to them after the arrest. And Mr. Maureen's position was that he had told the agents that he had gone to the Stripe store. And of course, that comes down to a credibility determination, and that's exactly what the prosecutor, again, argued in his closing argument. And I can give you the page reference for that. Well, I thought I could, but it was... Yes, the government's, this case comes down to who's telling the truth. Record at page 654, it's the prosecutor. And of course, that brings us to the third issue where the government had made this improper question about what other drug dealers do you know that Judge Head got so upset about. And I think if you look at this in the whole context, and it's not just the sufficiency of the evidence, it's whether this could have had a substantial effect on the verdict. And, Your Honor, it's our position that these are not new problems. These are issues that have been coming before the court for quite some time. They're not new, and we would ask the court for these reasons to reverse and remand the case. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have your case.